Hello, I'm James Lilex, and this is The Diner. On the air since 1997, accessible by hyperlink since 2005, and now available in handy portable podcast form. It's Friday, February 24th, 2006. Welcome. Just a cup of coffee, thanks. What happened to my Tabasco? There's always some Tabasco here at my space at the counter. Are you guys out of Tabasco? Could you check in the back? Thanks, I appreciate it. That's odd. Never happened before. Well, what's on the menu today? Let me check the board by the door. Hot dish. I know what that means. Of course. I suppose to those not versed in the particulars of my culture, that would be as odd as warm plate or incendiary saucer or something. I know what a hot dish is, of course. I just wish they'd spelled it differently. They've got haut spelled H-A-U-T-E and then dish D-I-S-H-E with an accent over it, like they're trying to make it look special. Well, it isn't. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilex, sitting, as usual, at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern Formica counter out here at the old diner on old Highway 23, about, I'd say, 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now. And if you're in the mood for hot dish, well, this would be the place. As I remember it from my upbringing, there was just one hot dish, really. And when you were served it, that meant that you were going to have hamburger and rice, and some sort of sauce that came out of a can. It was cooked until the hamburger was indistinguishable from the rice, and vice versa. It was a nice, meaty, ricey dish. It was very comforting, and on a cold North Dakota day, hot dish was good. When somebody brought over hot dish, you really didn't have to wonder what was under the Tupperware container. That's what it was. It was plain old hamburger, maybe with one or two grains of pepper, and mushy minute rice. I think we had it about twice a month. I think my mother, now that I think about it, rotated the meals. She had probably about a two-week repertoire, shall we say. The pork chops, the hot dish. Not a lot of exotic food, really, no. I remember, for example, we had a relative, a cousin of mine, who was from the East Coast, the fabled East Coast, come to stay with us. And one of the things that he liked was an East Coast delicacy called tacos. And somewhere around 1965, 66 or so, I had my first taco. That was exotic. We'd already been introduced to pizza, though. We had pizza in Fargo in the 60s, yes. Pinky's Pizza was the name of the place. Pinky's Pizza was down on Broadway, and they also sold it in the grocery store at the Super Value. And Pinky's Pizza was notable, well, like all pizzas of the day. It had a crust that was pretty much sodden, baked newspapers with a thin smear of ketchup, and then the cheese on top of that. And if you ordered pepperoni, which of course was practically the only ingredient that I would tolerate, the pepperoni was always the same, very small, and it had been crisped by the heat so that it formed a small little bowl. And in the bowl was a small container of grease, so that the pepperoni itself seemed to be not only edible itself, but an edible vessel for grease, this almost sacramental cup of grease that you could imbibe. And the best of all pieces was not the center cut, as you would have with some of your animal-based meals, but it was the corner. It was the little corner wedge. We didn't have pie cut in those days. No, our pizzas were square cut. And the square cut means that you're going to have four tiny little triangular pieces. And those were, for some reason, the best. The crust was the crispiest. The grease was the greasiest. If you got that little pepperoni cup in there, it was even better. And come to think of it, it was almost like an hors d'oeuvre. If you got that little corner piece, that would be like a perfect little hors d'oeuvre. But yet, if you were presented with a meal that consisted entirely of corner pieces. Somehow that wouldn't seem substantial. You had to have something square. And you had to have something rectangular, too. Your optimal Pinky's pizza had a little triangular piece, it had a rectangular piece, and it had a square piece. And you had all your basic shapes. And that's pretty much what we wanted out of the meal. If you wanted a circle, of course, you wait for the next day when you got the hot dish, which was baked in something circular and served on something circular. Whether or not there were any trapezoidal meals that Mom made, I don't quite recall. But, you know, given the lack of ethnic possibilities back then, that there weren't an awful lot. I mean, tacos came around 65, 66, pizza a little bit earlier than that. Spaghetti, of course, the big ethnic meal. I'm wondering exactly, what did they have in the grocery store? Wait a minute. Do you hear that? Hey, can everyone just quiet down for a second? You hear that? Good Lord. It's Muzak. There's no Muzak in diners. There's conversation. There's the clink of coffee cups against saucers. There's the scratch of matchhead on emery. There's the jukebox that we have at the end. Now, nobody plays now, of course, because everyone has the individual jukeboxes at their table and at the counter, but there's no Muzak in diners. That said, however, I do have a soft spot in my heart for Muzak. Not the Muzak itself, which is musical Valium, anodyne drivel, but the concept of Muzak. It brings up, well, an image that just seems very particularly suburban and American and optimistic, and that is some housewife in a house dress, or, well, no, she wouldn't have worn a house dress to the grocery store. A grocery smock, then, whatever. A shift, I don't know. I don't know what these things are called. What are those dresses between the knee and the hip, okay? And it's up there a little bit because it's 1967, but she isn't particularly worried about Vietnam yet. And it's a yellow dress, and her hair is in a bouffant with a little curl that goes under the ear, and she's wearing those pendulous big round earrings, for example. Oh, she saw them on television the other day, and they were just glamorous. And she's walking along, and she's looking for Biz or Dream or Jif or Skippy or Wonder Bread or Drell or any other things that are out there. And this is what's playing above, and it's all very bright, and it's very plastic and optimistic and suburban and post-war and perfect. I don't know. Of course, it's nonsense. We've edited out all the things that we would not have remembered, the squeaks of the cart and the fact that as she's walking along, one of the wheels of the cart gets that palsied shimmer to it and goes back and forth like that, and so it's hard to steer the cart, and it actually ends up going into a counter or into a shelf or something, or maybe if this is an episode of Love American Style, it goes into the thigh of Dick Gautier or something like that, and then comic romantic misadventures follow. But, in any case, that's what Muzak means to me. Muzak brings that moment up, that particular image. But, God forbid I should have to listen to it. Can we kill the Muzak? I don't know. Why is there Muzak? Can we just turn it down? All right. Thank you. Man, the looks the cashier shot me. I guess that's one of her favorite tunes. Well, if I'm going to demand silence here, I guess I'd best fill it with a song. Let's check the jukebox here and see what has been added the last week. Oh, man. They've loaded this thing up with Mancini. That's just perfect. Because back in high school, you know, Mancini, we regarded that as Muzak. We regarded anything that wasn't Led Zeppelin as Muzak, of course, but Mancini, oh, you roll your eyes. Then we find out that he'd written not only the coolest songs in the world, but nearly the coolest music ever for adults. And if we didn't get it quite, it's because we weren't quite adults yet. But somewhere between 26 and 42, the Mancini gene clicks in, and you get it. So let's see what we have here. We've got, okay, A1, It Had Better Be Tonight. Thank you. You know, it's a song that's just impossible to ruin, isn't it? Well, you'd be wrong. I recognize this one here on A2. By yeah, I mean, no, that just brings to mind some bored band grinding it out while a stripper waves her pasties. No, what this song needs is 10 cc's of Lena Horne. Stat.
If you're ever gonna kiss me, it had better be tonight. While the mandolins are playing and stars are bright. If you've anything to tell me, it had better be tonight. Somebody else may tell me and whisper the words just right.
Wow, what an arrangement. I'd play more for you, but just between you and me, there's a guy at the end of the counter who looks like a plainclothes dick from the record industry. They're copyright protection division. They've been coming around. On the other hand, this is American. I'm not trying to sell this thing, am I here? Hey, buddy, do you mind if I excerpt a few things? Oh, man, is he giving me the evil eye. All right. Okay. Check this out, though. This is early in the piece. The strings do something that was in the 60s, and perhaps, for all I know, is today, the sort of universal musical indicator of romantic danger. A very simple little motif, and of course, you know where you've heard that before. That's right, the James Bond theme by Monty Norman from the 1962 movie Dr. No. And of course, the Pink Panther movie was in 1963, so it's a very narrow window of opportunity there. It's hard to tell who influenced who. Oh, who cares? What's interesting about that Lena Horne piece there is the arrangement, the brass. They're nuts! I mean, listen to this.
Tonight, somebody.
I mean, that's just got to be so much fun to play. And then at the end, they just decide to go, well, let's end this piece in an entirely different key. What do you say, boys? You with me? And off they go. I mean, where the hell did that come from? But it's great. Well, I seem to have talked myself into a corner here, so perhaps we'd best break for a word from our sponsor.
You know, Pep Gang, it seems easy to get the full second series of four colored insignia and warplane buttons that come in packages of Kellogg's Pep. Of course, you know that there are 8 Army Air Squadron insignia, 3 Marine insignia, 7 Navy insignia, and 4 warplane buttons. 22 sparkling beauts in all. Each one a real eye-catcher. Boy, what really swell prizes they are. Dramatic looking, with brilliant designs that sure do stand out against a pure white background. For instance, one favorite of mine is that bright blue eagle flying into white clouds and carrying death-dealing red bombs. That's the insignia of the 70th Bombardment Squadron, and it's sure a honey. Now, there's only one way to get these smart-looking Kellogg's Pep buttons. You can't buy them anywhere. They come only in packages of Kellogg's Pep. You don't send in a penny, not even a box top. You just make sure that Mom gets a good supply of Pep for your house. Kellogg's Pep, that super delicious whole wheat flake cereal that's so good to eat and so good for you. Then you look inside each package for your prize, a smart-looking insignia or warplane button. You'll find the button at the bottom of the package in between the carton and the inner wax bag. It's your prize from P.E.P. Pep, made by Kellogg's of Battle Creek.
Ugh. You know, I've been eating at the diner for a long time, and this is the worst meal I've ever had. The coffee, for starters, is it's completely weak. It's translucent. You can see right through. You can read a newspaper through this coffee. And it came with Cremora, for heaven's sakes. Cremora, I've never... it sounds like some sort of parasite that hangs on the side of you. Stand still, boy. I'm going to get the salt and the crowbar and get those Cremoras off you. And the... Well, the hot dish is utterly without flavor or character. It's just as this... It's got good mouthfeel, as they say. But there's nothing to it. And it came with a glass of Tang. Yeah. The only good part so far are the buns. The buns are good. And they're dusted with that white stuff on top. I have no idea what that is. It's probably anthrax. So, I don't know where they lost it or why all of a sudden the menu just got so damn bland. It's just... I don't know. Now the music's starting up again. You know, this is odd, too. There's a new chef back there in the kitchen. I haven't seen that guy before. I recognize that guy. I went to high school with that guy in Fargo. Yeah. I mean, I don't exactly remember him because he dropped out after the freshman years. And there was just that blank picture in the yearbook as though he had somehow spat this grayish-beige mist into the camera when it was his turn, but... That's him. It's got to be him. He was the guy standing on the street corner just sneering at everybody going to class while he sat with his buddies with their collars up smoking cigarettes and listening to Foghat. What is he doing here? For that matter, the manager was just by a little while ago and he seemed upset about something. He was handing over the keys to some other guy. I wonder if he's around. Let me take a look here. Hold on. He's heading into the bathroom, this new guy. I'm just gonna follow him, so let me punch up a random song for you. I'll be right back. Okay, well, that was kind of embarrassing. I followed him into the bathroom. He has a tag on that says manager, the little plastic thing, you clip on your breast pocket, the pocket where you keep your breasts. And, there's two stalls there, and there I was, and I really hadn't anything to do there, but I sort of had to come up with a reason for being there, and just, following a guy into the bathroom and then deciding to comb your hair is rather... unconvincing, and I didn't have a comb. And if you just sort of stand there running your hands through your fingers through your hair, it just makes people nervous. So I had to go to the additional stall and pretend. And guys can always tell. Well, guys listen sometimes, for the guy who's not doing anything because they wonder if there's prostate problems involved, like there's some sort of blockage. And then you feel sorry for the guy, and you finish up your own business, and you make it out of there, and you don't wash your hands because you just want to be clear of the situation. And, if you get the manager of a restaurant who's not washing his hands, you got a problem. But I think, frankly, we have a bigger problem because I looked at the guy, which is, again, a troublesome thing to do because there's simply no eye contact at urinals, unless you know the guy. And even then, you got to know the guy for like 15, 20 years, and he has to be the best man at three of your weddings before you'll make contact as you're standing there next to the urinal, even if, and especially if there's one of those dividers between, one of those things that they put between urinals so there's not even a possibility of seeing it. But I looked at his face, and I recognize this guy. I recognize this guy because I beat his sorry tookus in debate in 1975. He was from Jamestown, and it was a good team. They were fielding a very good team that year, but... I cleaned their clock, frankly. I was first negative, and I remember it very well. It was, what was the topic? I think the topic was energy. That's what it was, the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. I think we were debating that, and energy independence. And they were going with the old shale oil first affirmative, which is, you know, right. I could first neg a first shale oil first affirmative in my sleep, and I probably did so. And we won. And I will never forget the hateful stares that that guy gave me. Because I saw those hateful stares again when he turned around and looked at me and saw that I was looking at him. I don't know if he recognized me, but I recognized him. All right, we have a new chef from North Dakota. We have a new diner manager from North Dakota. I think I know what this means. I mean, look at the evidence. Look at it. If you think... the music turn off? They turned off the music. I wonder if they're on to me. No. That's paranoid nonsense. I'm not going to go down that road. We will use the brains God gave us and examine the evidence in a clear and logical, concise fashion. Fact, we have two new employees here at the diner, and they are both North Dakotans, one of whom, incidentally, is in a managerial position. Two, the menu now includes a glutinous, tasteless, meaty, ricey, bland hot dish without so much as a jot of a soup sole of an implication of a grain of pepper. It is served with tang, and the coffee has become unaccountably weak. The evidence is inescapable. The conclusion is obvious. Control of the diner has passed to North Dakotans. Don't get me wrong, I have nothing against North Dakotans, for heaven's sakes. I am one myself. I was born there. I was raised there. But I know things change when North Dakotans take over. And I'm not sure that I'm willing to take that risk. I mean, things become blander, more Muzakian, as we've seen, or rather heard, and things become more rectangular somehow. I don't know quite how to explain it. Maybe I'm being paranoid. Maybe it's nonsense. Maybe, of course, I'm putting all the clues together in the wrong fashion and coming up with a ridiculous conclusion. But there's one way to find out. Let me hook the laptop up to the diner jukebox. Okay, I'm writing a program that recreates the North Dakota State Anthem in crappy MIDI form. There. Let's see what happens when I play this. The chef and the manager are standing at attention. My God, there are two men at the end of the counter who have just put their hands over their hearts. Each other's hearts, too. That's really weird.
Sit down. Anthem's over. You all gave the game away. Every man, Jack, every Jane, every Jill. You're all North Dakotans, aren't you? You're all Flickertail Staters. I figured as much. Well, the last time I checked, this was still Minnesota, my friends, and we do things a little bit differently here. What am I holding in my hand? Take a look at this. That's right. McCormick in the West, Schilling in the East. It's pepper. A tin of plain, old, ordinary black pepper. And we like it. We like it fine. Like a little pepper in your hot dish, sir? A little pepper in your salad, man? A little pepper in your coffee there? Minnesota stuff. Would you like me to get out the big piano leg and grind you some fresh pepper there, ma'am? Well, recoil if you might. I know, like garlic to vampires. But if North Dakota's going to have control of the diner, I want this to be absolutely dead certain. I want pepper at every table. I want pepper in every booth, and I want pepper at every single station and every single stool of the counter. Are we clear? Good. And maybe we can work together after all. One more thing. I love tang, guys. But double up on the scoops. Because that tang's game is weak.
Tang, chosen for the Gemini astronauts. Have a blast. Have some Tang.